This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to John Richardson, the Future Naut, Series 5, Episode 12. I am John Richardson. I am joined as ever, and thank God, because what would it be like without them? It's the Future Naut's Mark Stevenson and Ed Gillespie.
Yay!
Hello.
I've never done it like that before. Like, it's a Friday night chat show, and I think I'm going to carry on doing that.
Yeah.
It made me want to laugh and throw my arms around like a Muppet.
Well, echoing the words, I'm sure, of our listeners who are saying, that's a hell of a gap between episodes 11 and 12. But I think that's the way it's been, hasn't it? I mean, most of the emails that come in from people who've listened to certain episodes are, at any point, I think people come in and come out. And I think we've matched our listeners.
We're pioneering a whole new formula of recording schedule. You know, yeah. You get those series that, you know, the whole series arrives in one go, so you can binge it into nights, completely dive in. You get the ones that go out on a regular weekly basis, so they're consistent. And then we're just like, well, we're going to go totally random just to keep everyone guessing about when the next one's coming.
Yeah, well, we're busy people, aren't we? You know, aligning our diaries is not always that easy.
Are we? Let's find out, because I don't think I am that busy, but I still managed to have not arrived until now. What have you two been up to? There's been some very sexy chat on the old Future Naut's WhatsApp group. There's been some clanging names coming in.
Yeah.
Is that you? It's not me.
Well, you live in a clangy name place anyway. All your mates are clangs.
Oh, mate. Absolutely. Can't bloody move for clangers. I was with the ex-Nottingham Forest goalkeeper Mark Crossley on Saturday.
See?
Clang!
Look at that.
Yeah, I mean, that. Who's that over there? Jason Lee? Of course it is. You want a 90s footballer. I've probably been around him in the last few days. But you can't beat that, can you? Who have you been with?
The Garden Centre Association.
We did do the Garden Centre Association.
Right.
Well, that was my highlight. I mean, you know, personally, I reckon that's a pinnacle that I've scaled.
Yeah.
You can't have gone in. I know one of the things we discuss on this podcast is your insultancy, and how you go in there and you say, you fucking guys, you need to sort your shit out. We're going to come around there and beat the crap out of you while you sleep. You've never done that at the Garden Centre Association.
No, well, we were quite provocative. I mean, basically, as you're right, they're a lovely bunch, but they're also an entire business model, which is increasingly predicated on lots of cheap retail nonsense imported from China. That's a completely robust and resilient business model looking to the future. But more excitingly, Mark and I sat down and worked out that with 1.8 million acres of private gardens in the UK, it's the second biggest block of land ownership in the whole country after like the RSPB and the National Trust.
Wow.
Bigger than the army and bigger than the monarchy.
That's a great fact.
It's a great fact, exactly. And then suddenly, if you can begin to lock more carbon into the soil of those gardens by changing the way people do their gardening, doing no-till, you know, locking more plant material into the soil, using biochar, all of these kind of techniques, we reckon you could pretty much balance most of the UK's annual carbon emissions. So we got very excited. And then you throw in composting, and only about 6% of UK food waste is composted, and when it goes into a big facility, it releases methane because it breaks down anaerobically. But when you get people to compost at home, it breaks down aerobically, which means you don't get the methane, which is a really potent greenhouse gas. So there was loads of stuff.
You must have been carried out of that fucking Garden Centre Association meeting on shoulder high, weren't you? That sounds like an incredible talk. The shoulders cracking, little old nanas picking you up.
It did go quite well, but then a lot of them went, it almost like it hadn't occurred to them. They were kind of like, what you mean? You mean we could draw down carbon into soil? It's like, yeah, And like, oh, we'd never really thought about that. And they were like, well, how come we don't know about this? And we were like, well, we don't fucking know. We thought you should have been telling us.
It was also a bit surreal because they had a themed fancy dress dinner. And we know how much Mark loves fancy dress afterwards. And so it was themed as kings and queens. So we were sort of cornered in one part of the room by a group of king prawns that were sort of grilling us on, you know, this soil carbon thing and how it might work. You're like going, I'm just trying to have a glass of wine and relax. And we're being attacked by a bunch of crustaceans.
Freddie Mercury and Henry VIII getting cornered by a load of prawns. It's a future noughts night out, if ever there was one.
Hang on, which one of us is Freddie Mercury?
Well, I mean, in appearance, I would guess Mark has the most Freddie Mercury-like face. But I was just thinking of Queen. That was the link. Kings and Queens.
Got you there. Excellent.
Do you know my birthday is the same day as Henry VIII?
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, June 28th.
I guess he never turns up.
No, only in my dreams.
Oh, God.
It's not one of the ones they put in, like, the Daily Mirror when they list who's having a birthday that day.
The Garden Centre Association was amazing. And so, you know, after that, you know, Mark had to go and slum it in Vegas with you too.
Yeah, I did rather have to do that.
Did you? Go on.
Yeah, I'm not making that up.
So I got asked to go
to the big ball thing. That big.
Yeah. So I had to go and open a scientific conference where I had to inspire these scientists to think bigger about this big soil carbon play, actually, to what we were just talking about. So it's kind of a secret conference in Vegas by some of the people that we think can draw down millions of tons of carbon quite quickly and rejuvenate the soil. So I took part in that scientific conference, and a couple of the investors in the sort of organization behind that are The Edge and Bono from U2. So then we were all VIP guests at their show at the Sphere. And then I had
the ball thing.
Yeah. I had a meeting with The Edge the next day, which was very exciting. So me and The Edge are now increasingly friendly, which is nice, and thinking about how we might work together on some stuff. And then after the gig, Bono came down and sat next to me, which was quite interesting. Wow. And it was rather sinister because he kind of came up to me and went, oh, hello, Mark. We all know about you. And he put, you know, and it was kind of like, I don't know how to take that. But, you know, it was very nice. And, you know, so I had a few drinks with you two and then flew home. And then went to see Rick Wakeman.
Of course you did.
And then went to Legoland.
Oh, yes. What a time.
It was the best of times.
It was the worst of times.
If I didn't know you better, I'd say you were off your tits on something. But knowing you as well as I do, you've actually done all of those things.
Yes.
I know our listeners will want, they genuinely will want to know more about the work that you might be doing with The Edge, but there will be a load of people saying, what is it like, the gig in the Sphere?
Well, it's a really interesting question because I'm probably going to say something quite controversial.
Shit. It was shit. You two are crap. Go on.
Actually, as a gig, it's fantastic. It's amazing. And so there are some visually arresting moments that you kind of think, I've just never seen anything like that. And that's pretty extraordinary. There's also a lot of imagery in it about the environment and about caring about the planet. But I was just struck by the irony of the fact we were sat inside basically what was a massive screen while you two were, I think, doing their best thing. If you've been given that gig, of course, you know, to talk about the environment and social justice. And you're thinking, but I'm sat inside a bauble that is part of the problem.
In Vegas, which is obviously the most sustainable city on the planet.
Yeah. And so I was talking to one of their production managers the next day and he said, what do you think of the gig? I said, oh, well, I loved the band, but I didn't really like the gig because it made me feel complicit and somehow kind of trapped inside capitalism. And he went, you're the only person who thinks like that, Mark. I said, I don't think I am. But anyway.
No, I don't think
so are. I didn't say that to The Edge when I met him the next day.
Well, good on you. Diplomacy is a key part of our work, isn't it?
Yeah.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for your conversation with Bono about being trapped in capitalism.
Yeah. He's a very lovely chap. He was very charming. You know, it was just me, The Edge, Bono, a billionaire and a couple of soil scientists hanging out backstage at the Sphere with Liam Gallagher at the bar, you know. No, Noel Gallagher, the other one. So, yeah, it was an interesting week. And then I saw Rick Wakeman.
How was that?
Well, that was great, actually. I hate to say it, but I actually preferred the Rick Wakeman gig.
You did. Rick Wakeman didn't make you feel trapped in capitalism.
No, but also I think it's more my music. I mean, I've never been a massive U2 fan, although I've been listening back, and actually they are amazing. It's just they're not consistently amazing for my taste. So there's some amazing tracks, but they're not my band.
Rick Wakeman wasn't at the Sphere.
He wasn't at the Sphere, no. He was at the Liverpool Philharmonic Halls.
Oh, what a gig. Beautiful room.
Have you done that?
I have played that room in one of the great injustices, a room built to echo beautiful orchestral music around. That's to par with 2 hours. The sound check in that venue is, I think, the most I hate myself doing my job, because there's a room is empty. So it's fairly cavernous anyway, because it's built for Philharmonic music. But when there's nobody in there and it's just me saying, hello, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's criminal. And I'm ashamed of myself and my industry. But I do it for the money.
Well, you know, maybe you should join a band.
Well, do you know what? I watch the, what's that one where they all wear masks? Who's
the Masked Singer?
That's the one. I watch that and I think, TikTok.
It's time.
Really?
TikTok. It's all coming. It's all coming for daddy.
Surely, surely we'll know it's you because it'll just be Ralph McTell covered. <isn't it? laughs>
I don't think anyone's done any Jake Thackeray on the mask. That would be a hell of a thing to do.
And here is the Masked Singer singing the Bantam Cock.
The Blacksmith and the Toffee Maker by the Scorpion.
Who could it be? Who could it be?
I tell you what, I've never done it, but every series people fixate on the idea that I'm one of the characters. And it doesn't matter where I am in the world on a Saturday tea time, I'll just get a random message on social media saying, you're the fucking gecko. And I think, what are you on about? What have I done? The gecko's not some super villain that's just blown up a city. And I think, oh, the Masked Singer must be back on.
So can you sing, John? Because you know, your speaking voice, as you've said yourself, is a little bit Weasley and sort of like insipid.
Yes.
What's your singing voice like?
I don't know. I sing in the shower. I did sing a little bit on the sound check. I ended my tour in January. It's one of the reasons I've been away. Ended my tour in January in Belfast at the Waterfront Hall. And I sound checked. And my sound engineer, Dennis, who is a wonderful man and has toured with many great bands, toured with Morrissey. And he said, I tell you what, you sound fucking awful. he was generous about my singing voice, but I don't think I can sing. And I think I've got to a depressing point in my career where nobody would tell me that. But and then I realise I do 10 minutes of this podcast with you two and I think, actually, you tell me.
Yeah, well, I can't sing. I can't sing and I front a band.
I think Ed can sing.
It's not necessarily a barrier. I mean, you know, I fronted a band and also have a difficult singing voice.
I can picture you singing in a sort of more of an Eric Cantona, Leonard Cohen sort of whispering poetry in a gruff voice kind of way.
Yeah. Not so much singing as kind of like the funeral without the corpse.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
We have an exciting announcement coming, and I'm not very good at the whole sort of presenting side of, you know, but what you can't do is say we have an exciting announcement and then do it. So I'm going to tease it and say, stay tuned, because after this email, an exciting announcement regarding the Future Noughts Live. But while we're discussing musicians and the only member of the Future Noughts podcast who is in a band saying, oh no, not that Gallagher, it was the other one. Ross has emailed to say each and every one of you, which is a good start to an email, There's no hello.
Yeah, it's sort of like stand back.
Each and every one of you has somehow butchered my fellow countryman Chris de Burgh's name in your Christmas special. It's Berg as in Berg, not de Burgh, which is French for butter. Thank you for ruining Christmas. I was doubting myself, but then he appeared on TV tonight and said his own name, confirming my... I mean, I would love to see that interview. I'm Chris de Burgh! Shouting his own name for an hour. I think I would have read about that. But he said it confirmed my rightness and your wrongness. Your errors in this matter have now highlighted how wrong you may be in everything else you've been saying over the years. I'll be going back to fact check and pronunciation check everything you've ever said. Wish me luck. Love the show, by the way. I'm inspired by how you do so much with your lives. Without referencing previous episodes, what is the future of democracy using phones? And do you know anybody who's made a strategy for humanity? Lukewarm regards and the best for the new year, Ross.
Someone's going to actually put into ChatGPT, aren't they? Like, what is the best strategy for the future of humanity?
Yes.
And get an unbiased opinion from a robot.
Yeah.
The thing is, he says without referencing past episodes, but it rather sort of goes against the whole point of having a back catalogue, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really, Ross? In that we have discussed these things at length, and what you're saying is you're basically too fucking lazy to go and listen to any of them. Given everything you've just said about Chris de Burgh and your laziness with regards to research, you know, may you live a long and a happy single life.
Are you sticking with de Burgh then?
Oh, fucking hell. No, so actually, it's an interesting point because democracy is in staggering jeopardy at the moment.
It's literally just staggering, isn't it?
It's in staggering jeopardy in particular because we haven't updated it at all. And because of the deep fake stuff that's going to really affect this next election, you know, we're basically going to see democracy fall over. And we've lost so much faith in it. And now it's basically been overtaken by technology. So I think we're going to have something of a reboot. So his question is very well timed.
There's all those photos going around like Trump with large crowds of what look like very friendly black supporters.
Yeah.
They're obviously a deep fake AI. But the guy responsible for one of them, it was brilliant. In the interview, he goes, I'm not saying this photo's true. I'm just saying it's important what it says about the type of man Donald Trump is.
Yeah, because they couldn't find any photographs of him actually with supporters.
Stuart Lee then chipped in. He said, because Stuart Lee used to do this famous like show where he'd go on about, he told this massively protracted story about being at university with David Cameron and David Cameron making Stuart Lee eat his own vomit. And it's a disgusting story, very like classic Shaggy Dog. But, you know, Stuart Lee's punchline was basically, I'm not saying this story is true, but what it tells us about David Cameron is true. And so he said, I can't believe it. 15 years later, you know, Donald Trump's like campaign team are basically using my joke as their attack strategy. It's like, it's insane.
Yeah. Anyway, so what was the question again? What do you think of the future democracy?
Yeah, unpick that.
A plan for humanity. But you bring us nicely on, as you always do. You segue from one topic to another, and you mention Trump and misinformation, and that brings us to Simon, who's definitely just trying to fuck me up. He says he's a Kiwi Brit German expat now living in Seattle, USA.
Go on, so, do that accent. Go on, do that.
Nobody,
accent.
Even he can't do that accent. There is no way Simon sounds like a Kiwi Brit German from Seattle, USA. And if he does, then send us a voice note, and I will play. You read anything, and I will play the full phone book in your accent. If I can pick up on all those elements. He works for a social platform, which is a clue as to his email. He says, I had to rewrite this in my head a few times to try to come across as least of a dickhead as possible. So believe me, whatever you think of me, it has been worse in previous edits. I've just done listening. He said, I've just got done listening, which makes me think there obviously are a few accents knocking around in there. I've just got done listening to the Saturnalia Feast. I've just listened to your Feast of Mithras episode. I fully agree with IIRC Ed's call on putting X / the artist formerly known as Twitter on the naughty list. It's now even more of a cesspit of toxicity. And yes, Herr Musk has no-dived with great vigour off the platform of reason. I was impressed then when John managed with a straight face the typical sign-off, including your X/Twitter handle. You are great proponents of, for example, voting with your feet against companies with bad climate practices or investments. So why on earth are you not only still on X or Twitter, why have you not left with great gusto? I'm sure you have good reason. Brackets, actually, I'm not. aside, I'm catching up, having just binged series 5 during a couple of long journeys. I will now go back and do the same for series 3 and 4. Thank you for, in every episode, holding us all to task. Now, back at you, Simon.
Well, John, I think you should answer this one because...
Should I?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Because I don't have any of the login details for any of our social media. And I think even if I did, I probably still wouldn't have done it because I'd just leave it there. I don't think we're particularly vocal on there. And I don't know what the exodus has led to other than those few listeners who do still interact with us on X/Twitter not being able to. We're not particularly, I don't want to, you know, people go back and listen, but if you're getting to the end of series 5 as live, we haven't become particularly powerful on TikTok either. So I don't know what the social media platform of choice is for a podcast like ours, but I will apologize if it makes Simon feel any better for still being on X. And the sign off is pre-recorded, and that's why I do it with a straight face.
Yeah, I mean, but you though, you John, you're on Twitter, aren't you, or X or whatever it is? So
I am, yes, again, and I don't really use social media, but there is a professional obligation to be on things, and I just haven't deleted them because I use them for. Now, without this, I tell you what, Simon's rewritten his email to make him sound less of a prick. I'm going to fucking rewind on the edit of this sentence live. I was about to say I use them mainly for charity work, which makes me sound like an absolute bellend. Well, having just finished a tour, I'm not plugging anything at the moment other than charity gigs that I put on. And if there are a few hundred thousand people who I can reach with a simple tweet to say, if you're in this area and you want to put some money in the hands of a children's hospice, then here's you can do so, then... I'll just do that.
I mean, I think there's a problem inherent in his question, which is if you engage in the horrible sort of misandry and bile that Twitter is seemingly attracting, that's one thing. But if you're just using it as an announcement platform, I think that's probably no different than putting an advert in a newspaper to say you're going on tour. So I think we use it basically like just to inform people if that's where they get some of their content from. But I don't think we add to individually or as a group the cesspit of... disgustingness.
I think you're actually incredibly good at you limit all your homophobia and prejudice to your personal account, and I think you should be applauded for doing so. The fact that you're able to separate them so cleanly is absolutely, you know,
no,
staggering.
It's not homophobia, it's homophonia. I don't like things that sound like other things.
Oh, bad news for Ralph McTell fans.
You are such a twunt sometimes.
Do you have anything to add, Edward, on why we're still contributing?
You've never called him Edward. That is the first time you've called him Edward in 5 seasons.
Do you know why that is? I think because I read Aid Edmondson's book over Christmas, and it's set me back on watching a lot of Bottom. And I said it in Rick Mayall's dulcet tones. Edward Hitler, come here right now.
Oh, and no one's ever called me Edward Hitler either.
No.
I think I'm with you, John. I think we're a lurking presence on Twitter. I'm not sure we're adding much to the biliousness. I mean, you know, we could do a hugely flamboyant and pointless gesture by cancelling our @J and the F account. But as you say, it's only
to our 200 followers.
Yeah, exactly. It's like flouncing out of the room in a moment of kind of drama and going, that's it, we're gone. I don't think anyone noticed.
And also, well, I do think the jury's out on where you go as well. There was a really excited, hey guys, we're all on Threads and it's great. We just kiss and cuddle each other and talk about how we can progressively save things. But then most people didn't go to Threads, and I downloaded WeR8 off the back of one of our earlier discussions about that as a progressive platform for, you know, dealing with advertising and how these things are managed. And there's no fucker on there either. So at some point you do have to, if you do a podcast which pertains to be trying to make things better, you do have to slightly try and make sure people know where it is.
We could be the A-team of podcasts, you know, if you really if you really want to listen to them, then you have to try and find them.
If you can find Ed and Mark at a garden centre conference near you.
Well, that's actually quite likely.
Yes. Yeah, we actually got an email from them this morning, didn't we, Ed? I think it was yesterday, saying they want to get to work with us on drawing down carbon into the nation's gardens.
Using 4 bags of compost and a DIY shed kit, they've solved the environmental problems of planet Earth.
Why not?
So let's make an announcement then that is not on social media. Let's speak directly to the ears of our listeners with great news that although this is the last episode of this series, it's not the last diary appointment for the future noughts, is it?
Oh, no.
No.
We're going to the epicentre of intellectual debate, the Hay Festival.
Yes, and we're doing the opening night. I think we're the opening thing.
We are. We're basically Queen. That's what we are.
Yeah.
Kicking off the whole bloody event, aren't we? I'm going to be wearing some spandex. I don't know what you two have got planned.
Oh, we should think about what we're going to wear, actually.
Yeah, you know? Well, it'll probably be a big old crowd, won't it? But, you know, last time we did a show there, Ed, it was about 1,000 people. So it'll be a prop, you know, it'll be much further on from our last live event, which I think we crammed about 75 people into a room.
Doing fucking parrot noises in front of 12 people in a brewery. You're saying we could go further than that?
Yeah.
That was the springboard. They obviously listened. Hay Festival listened to that live recording and went, these guys have got potential for the main stage.
Mm, indeed. And
our
also
professionalism. I was going to make a list of things then, but you...
Go on then, Carol. You do it again.
You know, our professionalism, our sort of performative entertainment capacity, our ability to talk over one another, all of the qualities.
And can we announce our guest?
I think we can.
All right, then.
Go on then.
It's me!
No, so we're doing the opening night of Hay on Friday the 24th of May, and the special subject of the evening is going to be the future of Friday night, and we are going to be joined with our special guest, Amy LeMay, who is the night czar of London, who has been leading the kind of restoration and resurrection of London's nightlife, particularly post-pandemic.
Indeed, and what better than 3 middle-aged men with young children to talk about going out on a Friday night?
Yeah.
Just for our international listeners, maybe somebody should explain what Hay is.
Book festival, isn't it?
Yeah.
They got books abroad, haven't they?
It is also an international festival because it's held all over the world. So the Hay brand has already been globally exported. But yes, it's a literary festival in a small border town on the edge of Wales.
It's the nearest thing I think authors get to becoming rock stars. Mm. I think, you know, when I was asked to speak at it a few years ago, in fact, I was there with you, Ed. Yeah, I thought, oh, no one's going to come to my talk. And I walked into a theatre of like 800 people. And then afterwards, there was a queue out the door for, you know, for book signing. So they ran out of books. And, it's, you know, I think it's the only time as an author of sort of vaguely interesting and comedic nonfiction that I felt a bit like a pop star. It's very cool.
It will be cool.
You certainly don't feel like that when you're playing as Quantum Pig, do you?
Well, no, Quantum Pig is far in excess of that. But also, the other great thing about it is that because you're in the green room and you get invited to all these parties, you can literally turn around and there is, like, you know, a comedian or an actor or a scientist or whatever. So the parties are absolutely amazing because everybody's fascinating.
Oh, well, you're really putting me off going.
Well, it's going to be the first time the three of us have actually been anywhere and stayed anywhere for a night. Like, we'll actually be able to go out and not head back home or whatever. It's going to be carnage.
I'm going to take you under our wing, John.
Yeah, God, imagine what headlines can we cause at Hay Festival. That'd be exciting, wouldn't it?
Well, we should definitely try and do some stunts, you know, some stings.
Yeah, and some live Andy Summers as well.
Oh, God, that's such an obscure joke.
Oh, I see. I get it. It did take me a minute, but I'm assuming he's in the police.
Yes.
Yes. There we go.
Yeah.
Good.
There we go.
And we get a lot of, everybody is mentioning Prague in the emails. So it's not an efficient way of sorting out our emails. But let's go to an update from Sarah and Shane, specifically request Australian accents. Love listening to the show from Perth, Western Australia. We're writing to email you whilst driving and listening to prog rock as we attempt to leap the great land down under, a journey of 16,000 kilometres in 6 weeks in an EV, towing a caravan, as far as we know, becoming the first people to bloody do so, you flamingala. Your company and humour, I'm stopping it there. That's sort of enough, isn't it? Your company and humour has been most appreciated over the last 4 months as we've been working late into the night to modify an ancient caravan to also be an aerodynamic mobile solar power station and off-grid charging station.
Get in.
We are aiming to demonstrate that EVs can tow long distances to disprove the misinformation promoted at various previous elections that EVs will not tow your caravan and will ruin your weekend. As fellow nerds, I mean, slightly offended. Really. As fellow nerds and stat-loving folk, you may be interested to know that our van now has 830 watts of solar panels, 16 kilowatt hours of batteries, and an inverter capable of charging at 5 kilowatts when completely off-grid in the middle of fucking nowhere. And they've asterisked fucking there. But I think given that we've already said it about 30 times, I'm not going to say F you asterisk asterisking nowhere. Or 7.5 kilowatts in a caravan park, all under the legal 750 kilogram weight limit, including luggage. So that's exciting, isn't it?
Mm.
Good on them.
Yeah, I'm glad they found each other.
They do go on to say, they sign off their email, Atto Gal, bracket Sarah, and Gandalf Shane, two middle-aged folk who should have actually just found a local People Planet pint instead of walking the talk. It would have been a lot easier, but maybe less fun. Sounds like they're having a right time of it.
Why don't they set one up?
A rolling People Planet pint along their journey around Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a Facebook page where you can keep up to date on an earlier trip, and I think there'll be footage of the current trip. So perhaps we'll put that on the most progressive social media page, but not any bad ones in case any people we don't want to check their Facebook page see it.
Yeah.
But congratulations. Sounds like a hell of a trip.
I'm all for big overland adventures. You know me.
Absolutely.
I'm a little bit gel.
Is there one in the diary for you?
Well, no. But Mark and I, we're all going up to Scotland at Easter with the families, going up on the sleeper train. So if you count the Isle of Bute as a long distance overland journey with the small ferry hop at the end.
Mm. Yes, I'm going to be stuck on a small island with Ed for a week.
Ah, yes, you love it.
Mm.
That was quite musical. That was quite I've got my headphones on and that reverberated quite nicely.
Oh, you see, everybody comes to Prague in the end.
One perhaps for you, Mark, from Luke. Says, hello you three legends. There's a legend in production as well, so I'll add a fourth legend for Emma. First off, thanks for the podcast. I listened to your episode on the future of neurodivergence and it was incredible. My mother was recently diagnosed with ADHD and I can see a lot of the symptoms she described in myself too. Her medication helped her deal with her workload far more effectively and manage life admin way better. Then I went to my father and let him know that I was planning to go on the waiting list with my doctor to be tested and find out how or if I could be medicated. A long rant ensued about pharmaceutical companies trying to sell me medication that would have more negative side effects than positive ones, and that if I did have ADHD, it would have been spotted at school or university. I did fairly well at school, so my dad's side of the family seemed to think it impossible that I suffer with the condition, despite others in the family and my mum, who I'm very similar to, being diagnosed. I find it very difficult to motivate myself without a deadline. I'm constantly late and last minute on things. I struggle in work life to do the tasks I know I should. I know my family are being ignorant, but I struggled with how to argue back, as I would have got upset or angry, which wouldn't have helped anyone. I now wonder whether I'm using potential ADHD as an excuse to myself for not being where I'd like to be in life and feel selfish, as even though I haven't labelled myself with the condition, and there are people that suffer worse than myself if it emerges I do have it. I wanted your thoughts on the above, as well as whether pharmaceutical companies can really fix such a diversely expressing disease, and if I'm selfish for wondering if my partner and I have been suffering with undiagnosed ADHD. My father asked me, how much is it affecting your life, a question which I couldn't possibly know the fucking answer to. Your statistic with the life expectancy really shocked us and motivated us both to want to find out more for sure. Thank you for the podcast. I hope you realise how much hope and optimism it gives so many in such a bleak, unforgiving world. All the best, Luke.
Well, I actually replied to Luke.
Good on you.
We've had a very nice exchange.
Oh, lovely.
I mean, what I said to him was, whether you have it or not doesn't really matter. It's like you've got to go on your own journey and find out how, you know, how to manage your own brain, as we all do. If it is ADHD, that's 5% of us. So it's not really a condition. It's a difference that some people have. And the good news is that you can be turned to your advantage, which is no small task, but it can be done. And I said, basically what I said to him was, the job at hand is to go about finding out how your brain works and how to manage it with kindness to himself. And the kinder you are to yourself, the easier it is to be kind to the people who don't quite understand you as well, I think. I said he might have ADHD, he might not. It's definitely worth exploring. Any amount of self-knowledge is good. And the point is not to try and label it with one thing or another. Just find out who you are and find out what you're good at and find out what you're not good at. And then you'll end up being brilliantly you. And as you have more confidence in who you are and understand your differences, then the people around you will be kinder. And then the people that annoy you who don't understand it, you will be less annoyed by them because you'll be happier in yourself. So basically, you know, whatever it is, go on a journey of self-discovery, find out how your brain works. And it might be ADHD, it might not. And whatever it is, as long as you learn to drive it well, you'll be uniquely you. And uniquely you is what the world needs. And he wrote back saying, you're a cunt. No, he wrote a very nice email back saying that. It's very kind of me and thanks very much. And actually, he's been doing a bit of that and finding the world a little bit easier to get on board with. Well, you know, one of the things that we always talk about in this podcast is never pushing at a closed door. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes if you have ADHD or whatever, you know, going and talking to the person who thinks ADHD is, you know, made up, It doesn't help. And you know, that was me at one point. I think I said in the podcast that when I was suggested I was diagnosed, that I said, isn't that the thing that annoying twats use to medicalize the fact that they're arseholes? So I had to go on my own journey as well. So just, you know, find the people who you can listen to you with some compassion and whatever, and also be an honest mirror back to you, and don't push at the closed doors. I think with so many of the things that we try and do, we're always trying to push at the person. Oh, if I never convince that person over there, really, really doesn't agree with me. And that's just where you're going to bash your head into you know, a disaster. You know, go and find the open doors, push at those, and then on that journey, you'll find yourself, you know, kinder and more understanding of the people who don't understand you.
Wonderful advice, not just for Luke, but for everyone.
If any of my two co-presenters would learn this fucking shit.
Listen, when I listen back to this podcast and actually hear what you said then, I will.
John, I don't think you've ever listened back to an episode in 5 series, have you?
No, I don't think so, no. But, you know, I'm there at the time. I can't, yeah. You know, it's a Liverpool Philharmonic. I can just about tolerate my voice when there's an impending 2,000 people to entertain. But The idea of putting headphones in to hear my voice coming back at me is every and R and, fucking, there was an email there, fucking, No.
There's one, I think I've said this before, that I listen back to when I'm a little bit drunk and I'm feeling sad. I put on our Topia special where we interviewed you, John, and it always makes me feel a little bit happy.
Oh, well, that's lovely.
It's not your voice.
I won't tell you what I do when I get drunk. Here we go. So the listener giving back the conclusion of series 5 of the Future Notes. Aaron says, I was thinking of an easy fix for our climate issues. I mean, wallet, right? Is that not what you want? Since our politicians are failing us, but our king is an ardent environmentalist, why don't we have a little coup and install him as absolute monarch? Boom. There you go. We've been wasting our bloody time.
What's the email address on that? Does it say Charles at Buck House?
The monarchy was the answer all along. We had it right hundreds of years ago. God picked the right family ages ago and we just didn't listen.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think, you know, when actually all of democracy's problems are solved by having more democracy, then going in the opposite direction, having absolute leaders is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, if you've read Unruly by David Mitchell, you would never go back to an absolute monarchy. It's such a kind of hilarious disaster show, like reading back over the history of the kings and queens of England.
Although, having said that, a benign dictatorship is actually far better than a shit democracy. And you actually do see that quite a lot in the world.
But that's what used to happen with the monarchs. But basically, they used to come to the conclusion that a terrible king was better than the like horrendous uncertainty of loads of barons fighting each other for power and triggering minor wars all over the country. And so as a consequence, you'd end up with an absolutely abominable king just because they'd vaguely hold things together.
All of our systems are like, oh, it's slightly better than something else. But there's very little aspiration to go and create a really good political system. And people have this apathy that doesn't actually exist. And of course, there's no perfect system, but there are some amazing systems. And we've talked about, you know, Taiwan's a citizenship democracy and how brilliantly that works in many ways. You know, it's not perfect. But the thing that pisses me off constantly is people saying, well, we've got to defend democracy by leaving it well alone. You know, you wouldn't defend your muscles by never exercising them or trying a different set of exercises. You wouldn't defend your diet by only eating potatoes. You know, it's just ridiculous, this idea that we can't fiddle with democracy at all because it will break it. It's like, no, if you don't fiddle with it, it definitely will break. And it is now 200 years out of fucking date.
Yeah.
So in this situation, actually, a benign dictatorship actually for many people is quite an interesting proposition, because democracy is failing so badly because the people who are supposed to be in charge of it and hold it to account don't do so. And the BBC, for instance, never holds to account the system of democracy we live under. It just gets people in from the left and right to argue with each other. What's the fucking point in that? Why not actually do your job as journalists and question the systems by which we run ourselves? This is why we don't have a Radio 4 series.
I was just going to say, that's the BBC 2 series, fucked.
Yeah. I sense a little frustration that, have you been told to stop fiddling with things or you'll break them all your life, Mark?
I was going to say, we'll have a bit of a gap before Series 6, but the idea that we end by saying, if you fiddle with it, things will get a bit better. we all know what we're going to be up to. Should we do a Series 6?
Yay!
Yeah, yeah. Well, we are, there's just chat of possible radio action. So, you know, maybe.
So stay tuned for exciting news. If there's anything you would like us to discuss on Six Theories, then it would be lovely if you stayed in touch during our break, and here's how you can do so.
Our email address is hello@johnandthefuturenauts.com.
And if you want to find like-minded people in the real world, why not type in People Planet Pint, our official partner, for Jay and the F listeners to get together in pubs, save the planet and drink beer.
But don't tweet us.
Don't tweet. Absolutely not. Just send a pigeon. Send a non-racist pigeon to one of our houses and we will get the message.
Are pigeons racist?
There's bound to be some in there. Well, I didn't want to say leave Twitter and send a pigeon and then someone emails and, oh, do you know, actually a load of pigeons are racist. You're like, fucking hell, you can't say anything these days. So it's easier just to unambiguously say, I don't want you to send me a racist pigeon. Is that okay?
Right. I just don't know how you would discern if the pigeon was racist or not.
I'm sure there are ways.
We have ways of making you squawk.
I think I only said pigeon because the last email suggested a coup. And I think that's the way my brain works. And it's a sign that it needs a rest. It needs to go in the fucking fridge for a few months.
It's time for a coup.
We'll possibly see you at Hay Festival if you're there.
Yes.
Are you bringing Bono?
No. I mean, he hardly talks to anybody because he's always looking after his voice. But no, I don't think I am bringing Bono. We met once. I'm more friendly with Edge, or David, to his mother. But I don't think I'll be bringing him either.
What about his mother?
Does he seriously hardly talk to anyone in order to save his voice?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're doing a gig of that high tariffness every night and you're singing solidly for two and a half hours every night, you know, you don't want to be doing a lot of talking during the day. Yeah.
Wow.
Do we all take in a vow of silence now until Series 6? If you respected our listeners, you'd keep your fucking mouth shut between now and September. All right.
I've actually booked a week off normal work because I'm actually going to finally try and finish the Bleeding Quantum Pig album because we've got to go and tour that next year. So then I won't be talking for that week.
What a tease. So there's a Series 6 coming up. We're at Hay Festival and there's a new Quantum Pig album that's getting delivered. Gentlemen, thank you as always for your relentless insight, wisdom, kindness, sense of humour. Thank you to Ed for putting this week's document together, as Mark and I didn't. And thank you to Emma, who is always there in the background editing out. Sometimes you email in and say you swear too much. You should hear before Emma gets her hand on it, because it's an absolute... She'd be straight in the toilet if I was editing it, but she somehow turns it into the thing you've just listened to. So thank you to her. And thank you for all your emails and the ones we don't read. Some don't have questions and they're just nice comments, and we read them all and are grateful, and it's why we do what we do. Have a wonderful break and we'll see you soon. Bye, gentlemen.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.